ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And welcome to Soccer Today. This is a special interview-only edition. Kevin is at the Gotch Games Trials in Laval, Montreal, so he will be back tomorrow to tell us all about what that experience was like, seeing the Canadian Premier League hopefuls take the field in the Montreal area for the first time. Hopefully we get to see a team in that area sooner rather than later. But joining me today to fill in the gaps is longtime soccer observer from the Vancouver area, and he was in England for a little while back a few years ago as well. Simon Fudge, how you doing, Simon?
I'm good. How are you, Dwayne?
Good, good. Simon, obviously the big news coming out in British Columbia in the last couple days was the firing of Carl Robinson. I don't think anyone was surprised that it happened, because there had been long sort of rumblings that it happened. But some people, that it would happen, I should say, some people might question the timing of this. What is your thoughts on the timing? Why did they do it with a few games to go in the season?
Well, I mean, you can obviously take in some of the aforementioned reasons that they're obviously still mathematically in the playoffs, you know, and then they feel they can make a late run, coupled with a real sense that that they've also decided that they need to start thinking about next year as soon as possible, and that if they were going to make this decision to try and get the pieces in place, certainly in terms of coaching staff, in place as soon as they possibly can. So you can sort of get a sense of understanding and all of that. I would like to put one other thing on the table in terms of why this happened on Tuesday, to much of all of our surprise, I would say, especially here in Vancouver. I mean, as you say, I don't think the decision itself comes as a surprise, but the timing did. But I think one of the reasons why they did it on the Tuesday was that day was the final day of the club's season ticket renewal drive, which they do every year, and they offer a discount to the supporters to get signed up for the following season as part of their drive. And they do it over a course of about 10 days. And Tuesday was the final day of that drive, and they had a midnight Pacific time deadline. And I just wonder, having sort of come and made the decision on the Monday after the loss to FC Dallas on Sunday, that they may have been also receiving quite a bit of very strong feedback from supporters, particularly from those that they've been trying to go out and get renewed, that a lot of fans have basically said that they were not going to be coming back next year, that they weren't going to renew, and that the voice from the fan base was strong enough that they had to make a decision, that one of the things that prompted them to have to try or make the decision now on Carl Robinson and the coaching staff was that, simply as a way of showing that they were looking to make changes and that they had heard what the voice of what the fans say. I do raise that as speculation, but I think it does have some weight in some regards, because myself and other people that follow the Whitecaps closely, and even on a couple of occasions on social media, we've seen expressions of real fan base being very fed up and basically deciding, you know what, you know, we're done. I'm not coming back next year with season tickets. And I think that played a part in it all, in terms of why this decision was announced Tuesday morning and not necessarily at the end of the season.
I think fans can often handle rebuilds. They can handle not necessarily being as successful as you'd like, so long as they're entertained when they are there, as long as they feel that the club is giving its all and is providing, putting a product on the field that it's fun to watch. The Whitecaps, I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, were fun to watch. I don't think they have been in a while. Do you think that played a role in this? This idea that Robinson's tactics were so one-dimensional and so old-fashioned in many ways?
Yeah, I think that played a part. I think that might have been very much what the fans have been relaying back to the club, particularly those that had basically, as I said, made the decision that they just weren't prepared to support the club next season. If it continued down the same road, it probably has been a message that they've been getting quite consistently. I wonder even as far back as last year, because I knew a few people who, myself here, that had made the decision that they weren't renewing for 2018 and certainly did not do so. I also know a lot of people who should be coming out and watching this team on a regular basis and haven't done so for some time. And much of it has to do with the fact that they're just not happy with the kind of soccer that the club had been playing under him. And it's so this has been longstanding for some time. And I think in some ways it's probably one of the things that's really hit home for the club and what it's had to ultimately decide to do here. And I think you're right. I think there's a large amount of the Whitecaps fan base is more of a casual fan. And I think more than anything, they want to come out and be entertained. You look at the last two games and the types of attendances that we've had. They were sort of mostly filled to capacity in terms of what they were selling for the seats in the lower bowl, especially the Seattle game. And, you know, a lot of people walked away disappointed by what they saw. And then there's the game on Sunday, which reportedly had also sold very, very well, and they too just didn't put in a performance and were poor defensively. I think it's a big factor, and it knowing this organization as I do, I think, you know, I kind of almost go back to the time when I was with the club and after the first season I was there, which was the 2007 USL1 season, and they made a decision on Bob Lilly not to renew his 3-year contract at the time. And this, of course, was the season after they'd won the USL1 title in 2006. And I think a lot of the reasons why they made that decision at that time, and that ultimately led to them hiring Taylor Torgerson for 2008, was because they had been given a very clear indication by supporters that they weren't happy with the way that the team were playing under Bob Lilly. So you fast forward to kind of now, and you get the sense that that has played a role here in what they've been talking and thinking about for some time, other than the club's own thinking and concerns that or things that they need to be focused on as they go into 2019 and think about the future.
I guess the one question I would have most of all is, I think everyone agrees that the Whitecaps are in need of a bit of a roster overhaul, a lost roster refiguring of some type. And you have some big contracts that are going to be difficult to move. Brett Shea jumps out as mine is maybe number one on that list. Who is going to primarily be responsible for that? Is it going to be whoever they bring in to replace Carl Robinson, or is Leonard Doozy, the board, will they be the ones primarily responsible for the recruitment and rejigging this roster?
Well, I mean, I'll give you the rhetoric right now. Bob Leonard Doozy will consistently say that will be the responsibility of whoever the coach is. And I would say, genuinely, during his time here, that Carl Robinson was making those decisions. But make no mistake, you know, both Bob Leonard Doozy, Greg Anderson, who's the vice president of soccer operations, they monitor all of that stuff very, very closely, and will ultimately give that a lot of very close scrutiny. I think we have to think that it's going to be the coach that will ultimately make that decision. It's going to be very difficult for whoever is going to come in as Carl Robinson's successor when they're in negotiations to become the next Whitecaps head coach if they're not given the license to be able to shape the team in their mold, especially if they're looking at someone who's very experienced, someone we all know that has been, say, for example, very good in this league. They're going to want to have a chance to come here and put their own stamp of authority on things. And if they're not given the license to be able to go and shape the players or shape the team in the way that they want to play, and that they're being kept on an incredibly short leash by the soccer operations department of this club, then it's going to be difficult for them to sign on and become the next head coach. So the club's going to make... It's an interesting one, because I think they'll certainly they'll do their very best to make the impression that whoever they hire will be given the license to be able to do all of that. But they will. But don't forget that at the same time that These are, and Bob Lenarduzzi, Greg Anderson especially, but this is a club that casts a long shadow over any coach in terms of whatever moves that he makes. So they give whoever the coach is a leash, but it's not a long one. I wouldn't say it's an extremely short one, but it's not a long one either, even though they will always say whenever they're asked by media who's making the decisions, they will consistently say that will always be the decision in the hands of whoever is the head coach of the team.
And, of course, it offers them a convenient shield, too, when you're Bob Lenarduzzi in particular. You've had Carl Robinson in front of you to take some of that some of those arrows from the fans. This move, does that put more pressure on those guys to perform? Is there any chance you could ever see a major move in the upper management of the Whitecaps so that somebody like Lenarduzzi might finally step aside one day?
I think it's getting closer. And I think that's the other story that hasn't really been told here. And I think it needs to be told. The likes of Lenarduzzi and the upper management of this club are very much on the clock now, especially with the fact that they've got a financial windfall as substantial as they're getting from Bayern Munich for Alphonso Davies, and having already gone on the record as he did as recent as Tuesday and even yesterday from Bob Lenarduzzi that money that they're going to get for selling Alphonso Davies to Bayern Munich is going to come back to them, and they're going to put it back into the team and then back into the academy and the soccer side of things. The frustration that that fans have shown hasn't just started and ended with Carl Robinson. It is also taken into consideration the upper management. The difference now to previous instances with any big coaching moves or anything that has occurred with this club is that the fans, in my opinion, have started to figure out what this club is all about. And unfortunately for the club, the fan base has started to formulate their own opinions as to where they feel the blame really lies. And you can just go through social media, for example, to see some of where that lies. But it's much deeper than that. I think if anyone ever got out into the wider soccer community in this marketplace, spoke to anyone that is a soccer enthusiast, young, old, you name it, they'll point the finger at Lenarduzzi being a big reason as to why this team isn't doing as well as it should. And that's a big problem for the club. How do you get around that perception? How do you get around, trying to show that isn't the reason that they need to be thinking about? Because at the end of the day, if the fans develop an opinion on something pertaining to your club, to the club that you support, they're not likely going to change their minds. And I think that's the big issue. That's the big problem the club has now. It faces a dilemma and a growing one. And I think it's a real problem. I think it's something that they're going to have a very difficult time adjusting or being able to deal with. That in many people's eyes, the real root of what's not making this team be as successful as it is or what's not working lies with that upper management, which has been a state of continuity there for some time. Continuity is always good in many respects, but it also, if it's been there for an extremely long time, and we're talking about a soccer operations group, an upper management group that has been there as long as I've ever known the club. So we're talking about well over 10 years, maybe even longer. Getting close to 15, same people, same culture, same mindset, same types of decisions being made. It gets to a point where that continuity turns from being an asset, something valuable, to being an ever-increasing liability. And I start to wonder if that is very much being the case. At the very least, these things, certainly in this local marketplace with media, need to become more of a subject of debate than they have been up until this point. I've been one that has talked about this on quite a regular basis myself as being something that needs to be discussed. But I think now more than ever, because it's been raised by supporters, it's been highlighted by them and their level of dissatisfaction, because this isn't going to begin, and this move on Tuesday doesn't do anything to fully appease them. Not far from it. They've got a big problem on their hands now, the club. They've got to to deal with a fan base that it doesn't have the confidence in the upper management that they would probably need for it to keep thinking of the idea that that is not something that should be moved around with. And the ownership group should take mind of this, take note of this, because it will ultimately lead to them having to ultimately make a decision. And the worst thing that could ever happen is that they get forced into a situation where they're having to make that decision in a reactive sort of way, because that dissatisfaction, that discontent has grown to such a level, it's become incredibly toxic.
It's hard to imagine another individual in all of North American soccer that is more associated with the club in this part of the world than Bob Leonarduzzi. So it would be challenging, I think we all understand, to separate him. And I think you couldn't just cold turkey, as you say, react to something and eliminate him from a role. I think you'd have to transition him to something symbolic. But that's not necessarily an easy thing to do, is it?
Well, I've always been of the sense that I wouldn't be of the mindset that you get rid of someone like that cold turkey. I think that's the one thing the ownership group probably are a little bit more concerned about in terms of wanting to do something like that. They're worried about how unpopular that might be. I would make the argument that they wouldn't be as unpopular as they may think it is. If people on behalf of, say, the ownership group quietly went out and really got a good sense of what people were thinking in this marketplace, they might be quite surprised by the idea that if they pose that very question, like, let's say we fired Bob Leonarduzzi tomorrow, what would you think? You would probably get a good number of people, maybe as much as 50% of those very people that they potentially interviewed, to say that that was a very good idea and it was a little bit overdue and happening. I agree with you in the sense that trying to have a transition into phases would probably be the best way to do it. That Leonarduzzi goes from being an active president to a past president, for example. But that there's more swift decisions made on others on the executive level. This is a club that I'm ever increasingly becoming of the mindset, and have been for some time myself, but I think others, and I think a lot of others in the fan base are as well, that moving into the post-Leonarduzzi era is in the best interest in terms of this club's future. And I just think that will become an ever-increasing topic of debate, as I said before, because you can make as many coaching changes and point the finger at whoever was coaching this team. But as time has gone on with this team in the MLS era, and you have a fan base particularly made up of a generation of people who don't have a connection to Bob Leonarduzzi in terms of what he was like when he was a player or even as a coach, they just know him as being in his current role as president, they're going to be saying to themselves, you know, this is where the real problem lies. And those voices, I fear, are only going to get bigger and bigger. And it puts the club in a most uncomfortable position, because it's going to have to start facing up to things that it hasn't had to face up to before. And again, there's a way for them to have to handle such transformational change, which I'm afraid is not that far around the corner from them having to make at some point. There's a right way and a wrong way to move this club in the right direction. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, certainly in my opinion, as I think it would be in a lot of other opinions, it is a club and an organization that needs fresh ideas. It needs a fresh approach. But as you say, how is that going to happen? It's very difficult to say. It may be something that cannot be realistically thought about doing unless there's even actually a change in ownership. Because the way the relationships are set up between particularly Greg Kerfoot and Bob Leonarduzzi, which goes all the way back to the USL days in 2001, and then all of Kerfoot's fellow ownership partners of, you know, Mallett, you know, Jeff Mallett, Steve Russo, and Steve Nash, that they won't be prepared to make that kind of change, that those relationships are strong, and that they won't, you know, that changing all of that sort of thing isn't something that they haven't really given a lot of consideration. I would say to them as owners that it is something they're going to need to do, because you don't want to have the angry mob be banging on your door demanding this if things don't continue to improve. And that has ultimately become the very reason for supporters as to why this team isn't successful. You don't want to get this, you don't want the situation to get much worse than it could. And so it's a question of what does the club have a good, clear idea of knowing when it will be right to make that kind of transformation, moving that club into the next era. Because it is about the future of the club at the end of the day. And I think these topics of debate, which I think have been long overdue in discussing, are definitely should be now on the table for fans and media alike, certainly in this marketplace and anyone who follows MLS to discuss. Because I think you know, the club's been nearly a decade in this league, and it's not necessarily given an impression to anyone that it's anywhere close to being competitive enough to fight for an MLS Cup title.
I'm curious, just in a general sense, and then we'll move on from Leonard Dizzy, where does he fit in the psyche, the overall history of Vancouver sports? I mean, you know, you've got a city that really does embrace its longtime legends. Trevor Linden comes to mind, Lisson Deans, obviously. Where does he fit in the average Vancouverite's minds in terms of sporting legends in that city?
Oh, I think he's right up there. I mean, again, I think it's a generational thing. I think those that remember Bob, it's not as easy of a question to answer as you might think. It all depends, I guess, on who you talk to and what generation they are. I think those that remember him as a player and as a coach would think of him very fondly. In many ways, he's also a very good person, very engaging person to speak to as well. So you will find those that will have a very positive assessment of him and what he's done in his career. There are those out there as well that are not big fans of him. And it's interesting to me that those that aren't big fans of him are quite clear in that. They think he's been given sort of too much consideration. In some respects, he wasn't that great of a player in some people's minds. He was also not that great of a coach. He didn't necessarily do that great of a job in some people's opinions with the Canadian national team when he was running that setup. It's hard to when he was head coach of the Vancouver 86ers, his assistant Alan Arrington was really the person that spent most of the time doing the real coaching and anything, you know, and stuff of the team, and Bob oversaw it. So you have, I think, strong opinions of him sort of on both sides. Again, the problem is that Bob's built really good relationships with media people in this city for a very, very long time. So every time you hear an interview with him, either on radio, as I did say on Tuesday, it tends to be a fairly favorable type of interview. He doesn't end up on the receiving end of sharp questioning, which at times probably should be something that he should be encountering in the position that he's in as the club's president. And I think over time that has courted him a lot of favor. And whether that has been fully justified or not, it's probably going to end up being a topic of debate, because, you know, I've met a lot of people who've been probably around soccer in this city as long as Bob Lanaduzzi has, and they're not big fans of him, and have not been for some time. So I think it's a bit spotty in terms of where he is. Comparing him to a Trevor Linden, I would think people would probably point a little bit more to someone like Trevor Linden being a little bit more of a Vancouver sports legend in terms of what he did in most people's eyes. He certainly was playing in the more high-profile team in the marketplace. But he is sort of put up there alongside of Trevor Linden and a Louis Pasaglia, who obviously was place kicker with the BC Lions, as being, you know, sort of real legends of the game. And you dig a little deeper, I think, amongst the marketplace here,
and you speak to people, and you start getting a wider range of opinion about him than maybe you would have initially anticipated. And part of the reason why that hasn't really come up to the fore is there's never really been, it's never been something that's been ever been explored. But, you know, for argument's sake, you could say that it should be explored.
All right. In terms of replacing Carl Robinson, you sort of implied a big name a minute ago. You sort of implied, I think, Siggy Schmidt is who you might have been referring to. You correct me if I'm wrong there. There's also in the soccer circles, Mark Sanso's name comes up as a possible replacement. Obviously, they could go completely off the board as well. Do you have any indication of when this hire is going to take place and any names that are attached or desired right now?
No, nothing that I would. I mean, my point was a bit more on the general side. But you know, certainly the likes of a Siggy Schmidt and Mark DeSantos, I'm sure, will be names that have bandied about. Not necessarily seen anything that has come my way that would suggest that they're certainly chatting to anyone. In terms of the timeline, I think, like I said, I think, you know, having made this decision now, they want to use the remainder of the season and even the time period, which is when the MLS playoffs are on, potentially to lock down who that person needs to be. You do wonder a little bit if they're going to try and get, if they've got someone very clearly in mind, that they would maybe hire him before the end of the regular season, which will be when a lot of other clubs obviously will also be wrapped up for the year, that they're not in the postseason, and then you have obviously those playing games, and that suddenly we'll have another bunch of teams wrapping up their season, and that really is for the most part, even though the playoffs are still beyond, when the off season starts for everybody, for a lot of teams going into 2019. So you look at about a month from now, and you say to yourself, are they aiming to try and get someone in right around the end of October, beginning of November, to really get the ball rolling in terms of player acquisition and making big changes? Because I think we have to anticipate, obviously, that there's going to be a huge amount of turnover in this roster, because so many of the players that are currently there obviously were brought in by Carl Robinson, and I think in one or two cases that they've not been players that the club have been totally satisfied with, so they're going to ultimately make a decision, which obviously is going to free up room for whoever the new coach is to bring in his type of players into the team. So I look at that as being possibly the timeline. As much as there's all that speculation and who's been linked and who's been tapped up, the club will be, you know, based on my prior experiences, the club will be, I think, thorough, although maybe quite diligent in moving on this as quickly as they can, but trying to be as thorough as they can in that timeline. So I start to say to myself that, I would sort of look around as the end of the regular season as being potentially, I think, the very time when we could anticipate who formally will be announced as Carl Robinson's successor. Because, as I say, in a lot of respects, that's when really the off season for most clubs in this league begins. And I think the club wants to be in a position where it's got its coach in place at that time so that they can get things moving as they move towards 2019.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the Canadian national team. Obviously, huge news this week with Blue Tabla committing to Canada, something that I think surprised a lot of us. What was your take on that? And I guess my follow-up question to that is maybe should we be putting a little bit of cold water on our face until we see this kid actually perform at a national team level, or should we just be excited as Canadian national team observers?
Oh, I think we should be excited. I mean, what a Tuesday it was in many respects. There was also some other news in the world outside of sports that happened that day that was also quite significant as well. When you tend to get sort of three major things kind of happen like that, it's either within your specific realm and it ends up being kind of an exciting day. And that certainly was one of them. I was certainly a bit surprised to see that come out as news as it did that day, but maybe ultimately not too surprised that it's occurred. It just shows the influence that John Herdman is having in terms of getting the young players that he's starting to look at and shape this team in his way under, and he obviously has been able to go and persuade Balu Tabla to make the commitment to come to play for Canada. I think it's huge news. I think it's
you know, this is a player that's got huge potential, that's in a system with a club that is going to very much allow him to develop. You know, obviously, whether that ultimately translates into him becoming a regular first-team player at Barcelona is very much up for debate. But you can't take away from the fact that for as young of a player as he is right now, having certainly developed very well at the Montreal Impact, that he's been given a chance to go to an environment and develop even further again. I think he will prove to be a very exciting, a very important addition to the team, but a lot of perspective has to be given to this. I mean, this is a team right now that is made up of some very exciting youngsters, but nonetheless is very, very young as a team. And as time goes on, it's going to need to collectively and individually grow as it sort of tries to get Canada back onto a more credible footing in the international game. So I can kind of understand that there'll maybe be a level of expectation because he is a Barcelona player and that he can turn heads and do various things. But that I think in some ways that might be a little bit too much to expect. But I think he's, at the same time, he will prove to be incredibly valuable to have as part of the team, much like how you've got Alphonso Davies now committed to Canada. You've got a Jonathan David who's starting to grow with his now being in Belgium with Ghent and showing his worth after the last round of CONCACAF Nations League games. It's a very exciting time to be part of this national, to sort of be supporting and watching this national team, because you've got young, hungry players who want to go improve themselves, that have the desire and the willingness to go do it, and to potentially probably look at each other as a group and say, you know, we want to be the history makers. We want to do things differently. We want to be the ones that put Canada on the map, and they want to have that put on their shoulders. And I think Balu Tabla has obviously been sold that is an opportunity, an unprecedented one for him to take on. It would look very good on him in terms of his career. If one was to look back many years down the road at what Balu Tabla's career ultimately looked like. And so he's been sold on that opportunity and he's bought into it. And I think that, for me, is incredibly exciting. And you can't underestimate the influence that John Herdman has had in being able to bring him into the fold. I think that has proven to be hugely, hugely pivotal in Balu Tabla ultimately deciding that his international future lay with Canada and not necessarily with the Ivory Coast.
Could be a pretty exciting U-20 team if they can get them all out and if they can qualify for Poland. But that tournament in November, where they probably won't have some names like that, will be the challenge. Simon, you have a few national team players on the Whitecaps out there in Vancouver that you see quite closely, but I want to ask you about one in particular. We're very excited about the young attacking power of the Canadian team, and I can't believe I just said that because I've observed the Canadian national team since the 80s, and young attacking is not something I've ever associated with them. But what they're missing right now is the back, and there's a key player to that in Danielle Henry, who has had some high-profile mistakes in his career and makes people leery of him as a potential international defender. What have you seen from Danielle Henry since he returned to the Whitecaps?
I've seen a player that has been able to get himself, I think, back into the rhythm of playing regularly. Because obviously in the last little while when he moved to the UK, injuries really did bring his career to a halt. In many respects, and he just wasn't playing. And so I think the biggest thing that he needed when Carl Robinson brought him in at the start of the season was to get him back into a rhythm. But of course, he wasn't 100% fit. I think he had some injury issues even before the season started. And so he took a 4-week loan to Ottawa, got some game time in there. And then shortly after, you know, doing that, he came back to Vancouver. And I think slowly but surely he has been able to get himself fitted in alongside of Kendall Waston, or if it's been Aha alongside of, or in that center back role where he's been able to show that his consistency
or his ability to perform and be the kind of center back that a lot of people had obviously thought that he could become, maybe starting to show up. He's a little bit older, a little bit more mature. I think he has been well-guided, well-coached in terms of sharpening a lot of his abilities. There is still that sort of clumsiness about his play a little bit that always concerns me, and showed up a little bit in the last maybe couple of games. But this has been a big year for him in terms of being able to really, you know, get everything back on track and restore his ability to be a center back, not just for club but for country. And certainly we hope he will continue to play as a center back, certainly if he does play for Canada, and not have to go through the nightmares of being played out of position as he was under Benito Floro. He has I think he can take away from this season a lot, because it's put him back on track, and I think he's taken the opportunity that was given to him by Vancouver and made the most of it. I certainly think of as any Canadian national team supporter that one should be very thankful that the Whitecaps gave him the opportunity to get really back on his feet again, which is really what he needed from his move back from the UK. He needed to try and get things back on track because of all the setbacks, particularly injury ones, that he'd been dealing with. So I think it's been good from him. There's still things about, as I say, his game that give me that cause for concern, but it's been encouraging. Thinking about the club awards that they have here, I wouldn't be too surprised if they gave him the Newcomer of the Year award, because I think he, whatever has been asked of him in terms of his personal performance, he's been fairly solid. And I don't necessarily remember, particularly from his time at Toronto FC, seeing Danielle Henry looking as all that solid at times. He's certainly given me a better impression of who he is as a defender than what I'd seen of him before. And I think much of it is because he is a little bit older, a little bit wiser. And I think he's also playing with a sense of being thankful for the fact that he's been given a chance to come into a club in a place where he can get back on track. This has proved, I think, at the end of the day, to have been a very good move for him.
Danielle Henry is a player that you need to watch week in, week out to appreciate. And people that don't see him week in, week out will often only remember the mistakes with Danielle Henry. So that's my little editorial for anyone listening to this that's still unsure of Danielle Henry. I think there's a lot of skill there and a lot of potential there, but he does certainly still have those hiccups that come down. Simon, before we say goodbye, let the listeners know, you know, what's going on with the podcast and where they might be able to find your work.
Well, we're, Tyler and I think in the near future, we'll be looking to try and get things back up off the ground with Soccer Talk, obviously, with what's been happening in the world with the Whitecaps, and also with the Canadian Premier League around the corner. You've got a number of teams, obviously, out here in the West, particularly here with Pacific FC on Vancouver Island. So we'll look to be getting that up sooner rather than later. You can find our Twitter at Soccer Talk Van.
All right, and that's going to do it for today's show. Simon, we thank you as always. Kevin is on assignment, as I said earlier, so this was an interview only with Simon Fudge. I'm Dwayne Rollins, and until tomorrow, this is goodbye for Soccer Today.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.